Oh, hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
Jeremy Daniels.
And we're here to talk about April's Patreon bullshit. Right now, you can get Cotton Candy in full, my infamous weird sex novella in full right now at Patreon for only $1 ad-free in its entirety, an hour and a half long audiobook right now.
Of gangbang sweetness.
Of gangbang sweetness. You can also get Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik in full, commercial free. Make humans. Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel.
Humans Under the Bed.
And you can get Humans Under the Bed. All right now. For $1. You can listen. You can literally pay $1 and download all of those audiobooks to your hard drive. For just $1 on patreon.com/KevinTheStrange. Gang, get on that shit.
Boop. Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I always think we'd download this broody-ass music, like, blah, 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 and then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit?
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. We interrupt your regularly scheduled reading to strangers with an extra special Easter Sunday bonus episode. I guess it's not a bonus episode, it's just the episode.
Yeah, just a special Easter Sunday episode of reading to strangers.
This is your idea, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think people need some Jesus for Easter because it's the reason for the season, as they say.
Well, I had mixed thoughts going into this Easter Sunday special, this special episode of Holy Matrimony, the Gay Jesus Erotica book, because Jesus and Christianity, it's low-hanging fruit in 2017. You want to really be edgy? You want to really be controversial? This should be the fucking Muhammad Gay special, and we should be dropping this on Ramadan. If you really want to be edgy.
I don't want to see your head cut off.
See? That's what I'm saying. There's like, there will be no pushback on this, you know?
As long as I have all the rights to your books.
This isn't.
You'll make the news. We'll sell a few thousand copies.
This isn't any kind of, there's no consequences to being, to shitting on Christianity in this climate. Now, years ago, back in the 1990s, that was a whole different story. The moral majority, the authority figures in the 1990s were the evangelical Christian right, and they had control of the media. Basically, they had the Parent Television Council and would do boycotts of sponsors of television shows, of movies. One of the big things they tried to do was they tried to put severe regulations on violent video games. It was the Christians we had to worry about in the 90s, and this would be a great type of fuck you to Christians from the 1990s. Gay Jesus Erotica.
Gay Jesus Erotica just fits now. They're still fighting the good fight in their opinion on the homosexuals.
But the type of people that I fucking hate in this cultural climate, the social justice warriors, the regressive left, they love this. They love, oh, you're being blasphemous towards Jesus. You're making Jesus gay? That's fantastic. I get high fives from social justice warriors for doing this. So it's I've got mixed feelings about it because fuck them and fuck everything they stand for. And I should do a gay Muhammad story because it would piss them off. Because it would get the social justice warriors calling me an Islamophobe. They're not going to call me a Christophobe for doing this.
Well, that's true. All right. It's all silly. It really is.
And that's really what it finally comes down to, right? Is just because the Christians aren't in power now, it doesn't mean that the next chance they get. In fact, we're sort of in the beginning of that, I think. With the Republicans having complete control of Congress right now, and a Republican, quote unquote, Republican president, Trump isn't really
people
a Republican.
Believing in flat Earth and fit no dinosaurs.
Listen, there very well could be a new renaissance of the evangelical Christian right holy roller group, and they could be right around the corner from trying to clash with the progressives and their, you know, in this attempt to control the majority of the morality of you and me, right?
I hope they do.
So
please me if this episode was.
So I mean, I did write this. It's not like I didn't write Gay Jesus Erotica, right? It's not like I didn't do this. But one of the chief reasons that we're doing this episode today is because of how well this fucking sold at the last HorrorCon we did, right? Jeremy had a blast.
It wasn't Jeremy. It's Gay Jesus Erotica. That sells itself.
Jeremy had a blast selling Gay Jesus Erotica. Apparently it sold itself out of his hands.
As soon as you said it, their head went right to that book.
So it sold so well, we actually did a reorder. I think we talked about this on one of the podcasts. We did a reorder, and we will definitely have Gay Jesus at Crypticon Kansas City here in a couple of months. But before that, we're going to do Holy Matrimony here on the podcast. We're interrupting the Cotton Candy.
Yep.
Cotton Candy, we will return to the regularly scheduled Cotton Candy episode next week. And since it was pre-recorded, we will have no knowledge of the fact that we bumped it out. I do believe that you say that as we started the second episode that we recorded, the session, you said that we had recorded the previous episode only 10 minutes before. Yep. But in reality, it'll end up being 2 weeks apart now. So
yep.
That's cool. So should we talk a little bit about the origins of Gay Jesus before we throw into it? Because we're not going to come back after the break, gang. This is a special Easter episode. I'm not sure how long Gay Jesus is, all told, once we have it recorded and edited, but it's probably going to be longer than the typical 20-minute reading. I'm guessing this is going to be somewhere north of 45 minutes to an hour. So when we throw to the reading, we'll be done for the day. And then we'll return next week with the regularly scheduled episode 2 of Cotton Candy. So, so where did Gay Jesus come from? Gay Jesus was a response to this sort of the popularity of a really obscure genre of fiction. Some articles started being written on dinosaur porn and Bigfoot porn that was real big on Kindle. These like erotic monster books on Kindle.
It's Twilight kids growing up.
Terrible covers, shitty Photoshop covers of like a male torso with a T-Rex standing behind him. It'll be called like T-Rex Made Me Gay. Or Billionaire Tyrannosaurus Made Me Gay. Just really tacky, terrible fucking books. And apparently they were becoming really popular. And some of these Kindle authors were cranking out, 10 or 12 of these. Because these quote-unquote books are only 12, 15 pages long for the most part. And they're selling them for $2.99 and $3.99 on Amazon. And and then there was one of these jackoffs in particular named Chuck Tingle that blew up and became this huge thing. And Chuck Tingle does all kinds of shit turned me gay comics or books rather. And
about as long as a comic.
Yeah, that are like 48 pages long, whatever. But Chuck Tingle would always take it a step further, and he would write a book called, you know, Billionaire T-Rex Turned Me Gay, and then he would write another book called The Book Billionaire T-Rex Turned Me Gay Turned Me Gay, and the cover will be the cover of the last book fucking a guy on the next book. So it was this like meta kind of self-referential, fourth wall breaking nonsense, and it really took off among the social justice crowd. And there was this big controversy because the Sad Puppies and Rabid Puppies, the conservative wing of the Hugo Awards, they got together in a voting block and voted for one of Chuck Tingle's books to win a Hugo Award just to nuke the awards. The goal was to throw a monkey wrench in the middle of the awards, because in their opinion the awards had been taken over by social justice warriors who were more worried about balancing out the female and gay and black authors against hetero white males. You know, it didn't matter the merit of the work anymore. It mattered how balanced on the scale of diversity writers themselves were, not even the content of the books. You're not even talking about, well, how many of these novels are about black characters or about gay characters. It was about the writer themselves. And to me, I agree with the Sad Puppies on that side. It's like, we if you want diversity, you need diversity in content, not diversity in the fucking writer. The fucking writer shouldn't matter who the writer is.
Yeah, right? But the content shouldn't matter either, as long as you're touching your audience. I mean, if you write a good story, it doesn't really matter what the incidental characters are in your imagination. I think it's just a good story.
So what ends up happening is Chuck Tingle, and nobody knows Chuck Tingle's real identity. Chuck Tingle has this one picture that he's always used of this really nerdy looking dude, calls himself a doctor, claims to have been a fucking standard practitioner, like a regular doctor, and that he retired to write these gay books full time, and Chuck Tingle took it upon his or herself. I think Chuck Tingle is a social justice warrior, feminist, personally, because of what happened. Mm-hmm. So Chuck Tingle gets nominated. Chuck Tingle starts attacking the rabid puppies in fiction and in posts on the internet, and at one point actually bought a web domain. I forget what the web domain is, but it was a web domain that would normally be associated with the rabid puppies or sad puppies, and then Chuck Tingle made a website that linked to their enemies, to the social justice feminist crowd's books. So it was like, if you're going to do this to me, I'm going to do it right back to you. And so it became this feud between Chuck Tingle and the conservative science fiction writers and the Hugos. And like I said, the social justice crowd was just patting Chuck Tingle on the back, and Chuck Tingle ended up going from a silly joke to a fucking social justice activist douchebag, which is where Chuck Tingle stays to this day. He's just a fucking douchebag. So what I did was, I was on the phone with our esteemed editor, Sean Ferrari, one night, bitching about all this, just how I just bitched to you. And I said, wouldn't it, none of these motherfuckers are making gay Jesus. I should write a fucking gay Jesus story, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to actually write a fucking story. I'm going to write, and I was telling him about all the different, I was like, I'm going to fucking call it Holy Matrimony, and I'm going to have Jesus get fucked in his hand. I'm going to have him give hand jobs with his fucking stigmata holes. And Sean's just cracking up on the other side of the phone. And I was like, and I promise you, when I'm done with it, you'll actually think it's a good fucking story. And he's cracking up going, I dare you, I dare you. So I did. I sat down and I wrote Holy Matrimony as a fuck you to Chuck Tingle, as a fuck you to the social justice crowd. And, again, thinking back, it should have been a gay Muhammad story. But at the time, social justice wasn't what it is now. Oh. And the lines, the parameters hadn't been clearly drawn. And this weird symbiotic relationship between feminists and Muslims hadn't been drawn, like they didn't start holding hands yet and saying, well, it can't be rape if it's Muslim immigrants, and that kind of fucking crazy mental gymnastics it takes to have this the most oppressive culture, most oppressive towards women culture on the planet, get in bed with feminists of all things, man-hating feminists. And so, I missed that boat, but I still wrote a gay Jesus story, and I think that it transcends its needle poking at Christianity, and I think that it ends up being a fairly good book, fairly good story when it comes down to it. So
awesome.
I'm gonna read it now. So happy Easter, gang. We hope you enjoy this special edition of Reading to Strangers, and next week we will return with our regularly scheduled programs. So without further ado, here comes Holy Matrimony. And remember to keep reading. What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the Cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. Holy Matrimony by Kevin Strange. Read by Kevin Strange. Recorded in Castle Daniels. Oh gosh, what now? I said out loud as I felt the familiar buzzing at my thigh. As much as I loved Jeannie, my wife of 12 years, I sometimes wished I'd never gotten married at all. I pulled my cell out of my pocket as I crossed onto the Met Street Bridge, just like I did every single day, Monday through Friday, at 5 p.m. sharp. You could set your watch to it. In fact, I had, many times. I chanced a glance down at her text. She was asking me when I thought I'd be home, and telling me that she missed me and couldn't wait to see me, as if I was ever home later than 5:15 p.m. Her version of can't wait to see me usually meant make her dinner, listen to her talk about her shows, and then clean the house before I finally got to take a shower and go to bed, only to start the routine all over the next morning. Her father made sure of that. I'd been at his firm 14 years come February. Sometimes I think the only reason he kept me employed was so that his daughter had someone at home to pester and annoy besides himself. When I looked up, it was too late. Traffic was bumper to bumper. I was still doing 45 like I did every night. There was never traffic on the Met Bridge. There must have been an accident up ahead. Instinctively, I swerved to the right to avoid the cars in front of me, only there was nothing to my right except a short concrete railing, which my Mazda 626 sailed over with ease. I gripped the steering wheel and clamped my eyes shut, tensing up, not yet registering how fucked I was. Death is funny like that. It just shows up unannounced and snatches life away whenever it wants. One minute, you're wearing two different colored socks, wishing you'd done crunches for lunch instead of eating Taco Bell. The next, you're in the middle of a 75-foot free fall toward the center of a muddy river. Somehow, I wasn't conscious for the impact. I woke up to the sound of water rushing in through my shattered windshield. Panic seized me as the cold, brown water roared over my dashboard, quickly collecting at my feet, filling the floorboards in seconds. My car was sinking. I had to get out. I pawed at my seatbelt, but my head swam and I felt nauseous. I chanced a quick swipe of my hand across my forehead and pulled back blood. I must have smashed my head on impact. Looking to my left, I saw the telltale signs of it on my driver's side window. Spidery cracks and blood had connected with the window when the car hit the water. As the river gushed in through the windshield at an impossible rate, the splintered window began to make cracking noises as the Mazda slid deeper into the unforgiving water. The seatbelt. It was hard to think. Even without the probable concussion, I would have frozen up in a panic situation. Now the churning river was at my waistline, the stench of mud and fish and the roar of the rushing water like a tyrannosaur screaming in my ears swallowed my senses as I lost my grip on the slippery plastic buckle time after time. Finally, When the churning, angry liquid reached my chest, I depressed the button and pulled free from the belt's trappings. Just in time for the driver's side window to shatter, the force of which sent me reeling into the passenger seat as the car listed, turned on in, and completely filled with water. I was able to suck two ragged, water-filled gulps of air before I submerged into the river's violent wake. My pulse beat inside my ears as the small Mazda sank past me. I floated through the broken window effortlessly and hung there, suspended in a world of swishing brown and bubbles. There was peace here, serenity, a fitting way to end a tumultuous life full of doubt and shame. I closed my eyes and waited for death's sweet embrace, content knowing I'd failed my true mission, disguised by the mundane minutiae of my fake human life. That's when the hand, strong and sure, wrapped around my own and yanked me back into the cold, uncaring world above. When my head broke the surface, I gasped, refilling my oxygen-starved body. When I opened my eyes, an intense, harsh, white light blinded me. The concussion must have been worse than I thought because I felt my whole body rise up and out of the water. Squinting, I could make out a form, long-haired, olive-skinned, strong, bearded jawline. Then my rescuer spoke to me. "You are safe with me, son. Let go of your worldly problems. Be at peace knowing that you are saved." I opened my eyes again. This time, I was able to see a little more clearly the figure above me. He was dressed in a white robe, and his eyes were as blue as any I'd ever seen. Bluer even than the palest morning sky or deepest ocean. My heart leapt at the sight of him, an act typically reserved for those moments when Jeannie's father visited my office. His stoic semi-frown and graying temples always causing the bulges in my pants to grow uncomfortably tight. Those moments, of course, were always followed by guilt and shame and attempts to bury my true feelings. I was a married man, after all, even if that marriage had never been consummated. This was something altogether new. I felt no shame in my lust for this man. Who are you? The figure, still silhouetted against that blinding light, pulled my face close to his. I could smell his musk. I could almost taste his sweet breath as he spoke again, his lips only millimeters from my own. "Your savior." I did not have to resist any longer. My savior kissed me deeply, running his hands through my thinning brown hair. Just as quickly, he released his heavenly embrace, and my heart ached from the separation. I wanted to stay in that moment, tasting his essence for all eternity. My savior, my lover, my master. We continued to float above the river, oblivious to the sirens and searchlights of the rescue boat circling the spot where my car had submerged. It was my fortune that such a vessel be stationed directly across from my fateful plummet. I heard the shouts of men directly below us, but as I turned to see what all the commotion was about, my savior reached out and turned my face back toward his. It was then that I noticed his hands. I gently lifted them and gasped at what I saw. Large holes bore clean through those big, beautiful hands, and they dripped flesh and blood. "The stigmata," I said, astonished. "Then you're the Christ." He smiled, creating creases at his lips that should have driven me wild had I not already shrunk away in revulsion. Not from his majestic beauty, nor his bloodied hands, but from his eyes, as they were cast on an abomination such as me. I covered my chest foolishly with one hand, as if that would guard him from the symbols etched into my skin below my shirt. And with the other, I sheepishly pressed my bulges at my crotch, willing my boners to wilt in the presence of the man-god. He laughed and glided toward me, but I turned. The shame was too great to face him. Instead, I studied the men on the rescue boat below. They'd pulled my body from the water. Jimmy Nelson and Dave Bryant were the paramedics on duty this night. The men were both obese, as most paramedics are. Jimmy possessed a squint-eyed, red-faced head with close-cropped brown hair, while Dave sported a blonde crew cut atop his fleshy, jack-o'-lantern-like visage. They worked feverishly to restart my waterlogged system, trading compression duties with mouth-to-mouth for several minutes, yielding minimal results. "So, I'm dead then?" I asked, suddenly dejected, realizing then that my current form was metaphysical rather than corporeal. "Dying," the Christ said, attempting to pull my chin back toward him. I resisted, morbidly watching the paramedics work on my physical body below. "Why do you turn from me? Do you not find this form pleasing?" I felt his Christ whiskers on the back of my neck as chills worked their way up and down my spine, rippling across my skin like skipping stones. I laughed sheepishly. "It's my form that should displease you, Lord." "Why is that?" I gave him an admonishing "you asked for it" smirk, and I tore open my button-down shirt at the same time Dave performed the act below on my real body, just before he fell on his ass with a shriek, knocking the defibrillator out of Jimmy's hands. My true form had been revealed. A sight carefully hidden from those I knew, even at the most intimate levels. A sight not even my wife, nor her beautiful father, had ever laid eyes upon. The Christ ran his fingers over the thick, scaled, green skin that started just below my neckline, ending at the wrists to form human hands, and plunged deep below the waistline, ending finally in human feet. A perfect mirage to blend in to a world I had no right, by rational laws of biology, to inhabit. The Christ traced the runes etched into my chest, and once again I was compelled to shy away. "They don't repulse you, Lord?" How could such intricately crafted symbols repulse? Their beauty is mesmerizing. But they are an affront to you and the race your father created. They are the omen, the warning, and the key to the destruction of human civilization. "Indeed they are," Jesus said. It was clear his thoughts were elsewhere, as evidenced by his bloody fingers trailing ever closer to the button atop my trousers. He popped it through the fabric slit with an effortless twist of the wrist and tugged. Curiosity had overcome Dave's revulsion and terror below. With Jimmy begging him to burn my dying body, he too removed my pants, but without a tenth of the sensuality as the Christ. He removed his pocket knife and slashed through my work slacks, ripping them into several torn sections, revealing the treasures that lay below my belt line. don't understand, Lord, I stammered, finding my heart's racing so fast that I could barely speak as he lowered his head to inspect all three of my cocks. My heart's racing so fast I could barely speak. My dicks were green but soft, the texture of human skin, not like the armor-plated scales of my chest. The two on the outside weren't all that impressive from a size standpoint. They were girthy, but no more than 5 inches in length. What made them special, though, were the ornate gold rings pierced through each urethra, containing occult symbols similar to those chiseled into my chest armor. My main dick, however, was massive. 9 inches and thick as a water moccasin. Naturally, this is the one Jesus was most drawn to. His eyes were like lasers as they zeroed in on its twitching, growing form. Watching the Lord's mouth begin to salivate at the sight of my humongous dong inspired a truly divine boner indeed. Is there not a place in heaven for all of God's children? The man God asked before taking my length into his bearded mouth. I gasped audibly. I had never been serviced in this way before, certainly not by my fat, ugly wife, nor, save for night sweat-inspiring fantasies, by her lovely father. The sensation of his wet tongue and lips and the suction forming perfectly around my manhood elicited pleasure I did not know existed, aside from steamy romance novels and the briefest of glimpses of man-on-man internet pornography snatched frantically while my wife slept. Dave and Jimmy did not find the sight of my dicks as pleasing as the Christ. Dave struck at my limbs and torso with a fire axe snatched from the ship's hull, weeping openly, denying the existence of such a monster in the comfortable world he knew. Dave would have it easy, drinking himself through 9 months of night terrors and post-traumatic stress before finding the sweet release of death through the barrel of his Smith and Wesson. Survived only by a mother who was secretly glad to be rid of her good-for-nothing son. It was Jimmy who, even now, as my fleshy form twitched on the deck of the rescue boat, silently committed the occult runes carved into my body to his memory, who would be most affected by the experience. Haunted by their subconscious power, he would become obsessed. Days and weeks later, he would research their meaning. Months later, he would learn of the cult of Dagonites, the group responsible for my creation, and then uproot his family and join their numbers in Dunwich, Massachusetts. Years later, Jimmy's wife and daughter would die at the altar of Dagon after Jimmy zip-tied their heads together inside a plastic bag and shot them. A blood sacrifice to his new lord, payment for taking his place as the cult of Dagonite's new leader. And, quite ironically, it would be he who resurrected my consciousness to once again attempt to lay waste to the earth, to wipe its face clean in preparation for the return of the great, awful, rightful rulers of this reality. Back at the scene of my death, Jesus was sucking my dick with vigor. A thin film of saliva was building up in his mustache as he worked my pole into rock hardness, the two ancillary cocks responding in kind, bobbing gently in the air as the Christ explored my main appendage. But even as orgasm neared, I could not help but doubt the bizarre scene unfolding in the sky above my death. This act, I breathed, willing concentration of thought while pulses of pleasure slammed my being like shock waves. Is it not a blasphemy in your teachings, Lord? Jesus smiled as he extracted my meat from his glorious mouth. Of all the misinterpretations, offshoots, and splinter groups using my words for oppression, personal gain, and ultimate power, you choose to focus on the condemnation of this beautiful act? Something beneath his robes stirred, even squirmed. As if your own texts have never been warped or perverted to meet the needs of power? He was right, of course. The scientists and occult sorcerers, often one and the same, who made up the ranks of the cult of Dagonites, had tried, unsuccessfully for years, to acquire a pure text with which to summon a doom creature such as myself. The cult performed experiments decade after decade, solely through blood sacrifice and rituals, using blasphemous texts to conjure an entity to destroy the world, as the Whateley family had done 100 years prior in the same little town of Dunwich. But the Whateley text had been disintegrated along with the abomination it summoned. It was by pure accident, deep in the bowels of a remote, abandoned, subterranean atomic bomb testing site, that I was violently summoned into existence. A particle smasher, miles wide, coupled with the dismembered reproductive organs of a virgin girl, ripped open for mere milliseconds a rift between this world and some backward, nightmare pocket dimension, pulling forth a consciousness powerful enough to not only ravage the female's parts, but take the lives of all 100 cultists present at the testing site in the time it took those watching by remote television back in Dunwich to blink. Afterward, the cult learned to stay very clear of the testing site and to encase the wombs in protective steel to keep the thing from destroying the precious flesh. My birth name was actually a numerical designation, AG-487. I was the 17,487th attempt at merging Earth flesh with outworld genes, and the only success after almost 30 years of experiments. The cult literally started from page 1 of the Necronomicon and worked its way through every iteration of every incantation, sacrificing countless virgins, birthing innumerable abominations impossible to control and sent straight to the incinerator, before finally stumbling upon the right combination of science and black magic, a monster man, fully conscious, totally aware of what I was, who I would pretend to be, and what I was summoned here to do. I was a perfect example of how perverted the texts of man became through generations of interpretation and translation. For 35 years, I'd walked this planet as John, living the most boring, most inconsequential life, waiting all the while for the call from the cult of Dagonites to unleash the other world from inside my armored carapace. Now, all of that work and patience seemed lost, all because of a careless text while driving. A well-placed tongue across my dickhead by the Son of Man brought me back to the present. Yes, I could see how the Christian's texts could have been perverted over thousands of years, how passages meaning one thing to a backward Bronze Age sand religion could be misconstrued by politics and power in the modern age. Perhaps man-on-man cocksucking wasn't actually a sin at all. The Christ took me back inside of his mouth. content in leaving my question mostly unanswered, but I was too curious now to concentrate on his blowjob. I gently extracted my length from his magnificent beard. Why would you meet my soul as it left my body, Lord? Why would a thing like me even have a soul? So many questions, he said, eyeing my dripping wet dick with the same regard a starving child might a loaf of bread. You are at least part man, and therefore have at least part of a soul, and how could I not meet one so unique as yourself as you begin your journey into the afterlife? Compromising his longing for my cock down his throat by stroking it with his hand while he spoke, he continued, I tend to keep my indiscretions clear of him, he said, looking over his shoulder into the blinding vortex of light hovering behind us. The Lord Father, I said, and even with my entire existence meant to blot out mankind and usher forth a race of beings that can only mean to pervert everything the Lord Father created, I still go to heaven? Judgment is not my department, Jesus said with a smirk. I'm just here for a good time. I laughed out loud as the Christ took me down his throat all the way to the green root of my meat. Rocking my hips, searching for an angle to get even deeper into his immaculate mouth hole, I knew that orgasm was not far behind. Even my two ringed cocks felt close to spurting. I'd never ejaculated in unison before. How curious I was as to how that might feel. As if sensing my thoughts, the Christ took my two smaller dicks into his hands. Into his hands, as in through the holes of his stigmata. The fit was tight, but his blood provided the perfect lubricant. My eyes were closed, head thrown back in rapturous ecstasy as Jesus triple-teamed my boners with a precision that could only come from centuries of practice. Jesus Christ was an expert cocksmith, and we were married in holy matrimony. So enamored was I by his touch, I did not notice the bindings slowly tying around my arms and throat until my eyes popped open at the moment of orgasm. Yes, oh yes, my God! Looking down to watch my load explode in the Christ's face, I was bound, I saw, not by worldly means, but by a series of white tendrils with blue suckers lining their underbellies. Most curious, these tentacles came not from some unseen companion of the Christ, but from beneath the robes of the man himself. This new knowledge did not abate my orgasm. If anything, the weird tentacle bondage enhanced my climax, and all three of my cocks burst forth at once, covering that gloriously bearded face in semi-transparent, glowing green slime from the top of his thorn-crowned head all the way to his smooth, hairless chest. Together, we caught our breaths, wordlessly in awe of the sheer volume of jism having sprung forth from my now empty ball sacks. Extracting my ancillary dicks from his hand holes, he began wiping up the jello-like fluid with his fingers and licking it off like a donut glaze. I'd bukkakied the Son of God, and he'd loved every second of it. His tentacles tightened around my neck, choking off my glee before my hearts even had a chance to return to their normal rhythm after ejaculation. Another tendril coiled around my dicks and balls, cutting off the blood flow, causing them to remain bloated and erect. Another tentacle probed around the area my anus should be, attempting to cornhole me. How sad I was in that moment that I did not possess an asshole. The Christ stood, He was taller than me and suddenly a more imposing figure than gentle lover. His features, too, had subtly changed. Once his most striking feature, his jawline now seemed angled weirdly. His soft, almost radiant skin was now dull and patchy, and those eyes were not from this world. Hope you don't mind. I like it rough. Clearly, it was Jesus's turn to get off. I was unable to even squeak out a reply before he discarded his robes, revealing his tall, lanky form, his hairless muscles flexed, making me wish it was those strong arms coiled around my neck instead of the white and blue tendrils, which I could now clearly see emanated from the wound at his side. Wordlessly, the Christ reached into that wound and yanked, dislodging what was now clearly a fake torso, tossing it aside, revealing tendrils a dozen strong, all compacted into a vaguely anthropomorphic trunk with human arms and legs attached almost as an afterthought. The tips of his white tendrils peeled back like bananas, revealing dickish things hidden beneath. Suddenly, I felt awkward, standing there naked, tied up by this creature's tentacles. Had I been duped? Orgasm fading, I could now concentrate a little more clearly on that blinding white light coming from behind the writhing knot of ropey appendages before me. The sounds emanating from it sounded more like the chaos found in the pocket dimension of nightmares and monsters I'd been born from than trumpets awaiting me at the pearly gates of heaven. As the dickish things hovered above my face and eventually struck down into my body, painfully feeding off my metaphysical essence like hungry mosquitoes, I realized that my trust and my lust had betrayed me. This Christ was an imposter? I yelped between gagged breaths, futilely tugging at the dickish things now firmly embedded into my carapace. Hardly. He smirked, his human features almost completely disappearing. Two translucent sacks folded out from where his human neck had been, slowly filling with my soupy consciousness. I found it hard to concentrate on his words as he drained me, my non-corporeal body quickly evaporating into nothing. I go by many names and many times throughout many, many worlds. Jesus Christ is but one of myself, a favorite, but not my true form any more than that of John Smith is yours. Almost all traces of the anthropomorphic being were gone now as his dickish things retracted, releasing my wasted, empty, metaphysical shell to float down toward the icy black waters below like a discarded feather. Jimmy, Dave, the rescue boat, and the dismembered remains of my real body were already long gone. Tetrahalographagon is my given name. The monster, the savior, the Christ thing said as it turned and made its way back towards the light, its squirmy body well nourished, its appetite satiated for the moment. And I will devour this universe when the stars are right. That name! I trembled! Or did the best representation a puddle of conscious liquid being slowly absorbed into the alien veins of my savior's, my killer's body could? It was a name important to myself and the 17,487 brothers and sisters who came before me. It was a name responsible for the deaths of hundreds of members of the Cult of Dagonites, a name ripped from the awful pocket dimension from which I was spawned. It was a name synonymous with one word. Daddy. Oh, hey, so I know we said we weren't going to
come
back.
Yeah, we're fucking liars, apparently.
We decided that it didn't end up going as long. Story didn't take as long to read as I thought it would, so we had a couple minutes to kill here to round this whole thing out at about an hour. So what'd you think, Jeremy?
I'm in love with your gay Jesus voice. I love it. It's soothing. It's like that, what is that shit that everybody, EMDR, whatever it is.
Yeah. That LSMR, is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. The weird girl that always talks with the brush. Oh, look. This is me. Have you watched any of that shit? No. It's fucking insane crazy.
No. I don't come up with those voices until literally the moment. It's like improv, and then I have to try to remember what it sounded like the next time.
Yeah,
I have
you start getting a little Mr. P at the end of that.
I know. I was trying to like back out of it and try to figure out like what was my gay dude voice and where was my Mr.
After your
where did the gay dude voice end and Mr.
Oh,
P start?
Easily. Once he came. Once he came, he became Mr. P.
Well, I started talking lower because of the dramatic effect of the things that were happening. As gay Jesus revealed himself to be Tetraholographagon. Do you know where Tetraholographagon comes from?
Lovecraft.
No. You've read a Kevin Strange story that has Tetraholographagon in it.
Oh, Robot Apocalypse?
Yeah, buddy. That's the fucking entity from the end of the book.
It is.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it until you mentioned it.
How about?
Because I saw that fucking name in the book and I'm like, what the fuck is this all about?
How about that? Tying those worlds together.
All in Strangeville.
Something like that. So, yeah, basically what I was saying was it's technically a gay Jesus story, but gay Jesus turns out to be an otherworldly monster and ends up being the father of the monster he just...
Yeah, it gets better from being gay Jesus erotica when the incest happens.
So it slowly turns from being a regular gay Jesus story to a, gay Jesus, like there is a such thing as a regular gay Jesus
story.
But it ends up being a guy dies.
Matthew. It goes from Matthew in the Bible.
A guy dies, his soul ascends to heaven, and Jesus decides to fuck it. But then you slowly unravel the parts, and it turns out he's not a man at all. And Jesus is actually fucking an abomination brought forth through black magic. Then it turns out that Jesus was also a pocket dimension creature eating the soul of the thing, and then that very last line makes it an otherworldly Lovecraftian alien incest story.
Alex Jones is gonna be proud.
Interdimensional gay aliens, dude. Jeez. So
I got something to tell you.
So when I was saying in the first part before we did the story about how, you know, I thought Christians are low hanging fruit and you know, there's not really any point to making fun of them now. This isn't really a gay Jesus story anyway. It's a gay alien interdimensional incest story. So, and still gay, I guess. They're both still male, technically. They both have male appendages, many of them.
Well, we don't
Jesus has dickish things, remember?
Dickish, yeah. Don't know if they're male or female. Pale, we don't want to judge its gender by any means.
Pale dickish things.
The dickish things.
What'd you think of the three-dicked? The three dicks. The
I heard that at Cincinnati. And if you remember me looking over at you, you're like, and he's got three dicks. And I was like, what? How can you get more fucked up in a gay Jesus erotica? Three dicks on one guy. And then you get the imagery of like somebody like beating the bongos and trying to drink out of a straw at the same time.
Is that what that's a good way to look at it?
Well, you know, hand jobs with holes. You got going on.
Oh, man. So happy Easter, gang. This might be the last Easter ever.
Yeah.
The way things are going in this country right now, we might be getting fake nukes dropped on our heads.
Yeah, like I told you yesterday. Fuck it, I want to read another Guts novel and live it.
That's about all we have. Did you have anything else you wanted to...
No, I think that'll do it. I hope everybody has a good Easter.
Yeah, fucking...
Eat some good food.
Find them eggs.
Listen to this at church.
Yeah. Play this to your local pastor or your mom.
No, I envision somebody actually listening to it on their iPod while they're at church.
All right. We will return with part two of Cotton Candy.
And like
we
said, it's going to be out of sequence because we didn't realize we were going to do this. So it'll make it seem like we didn't know there was a space in between these two episodes. because we didn't.
We should really talk more about what we're going to do, because so next week's episode, we think we recorded right after, we think was going to air right after the last one. The beginning of this episode, we said we weren't going to come back after the break, and we did.
Well, then we're going to have to actually plan and write shit down, and we wouldn't listen to it anyway or follow it. So.
Probably not.
It'll be all right. People expect this from us.
All right. Well, Donald Trump, if you're listening to this podcast, please keep your finger off the nuke button.
Legalize weed, for God's sakes, while we're at it.
Unless nukes are fake, and then...
Then push the button.
Why don't you just... Mr. Trump. Bro. Just push the fucking button. Let's figure out... Let's figure this out. Are they real or are they fake? Eddie Bravo thinks nukes are fake.
I know. We were talking about that over lunch.
Flat Earth. Hashtag Flat Earth, motherfuckers. We'll see you next week.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.